Africa recently announced the launch of the Triple-Double NBA Africa Startup Accelerator, focusing on early-stage startup companies across the continent. NBA Africa CEO Claire Akamanzi tells me that the accelerator seeks to support young African entrepreneurs, mainly those working in the technology and creative industry ecosystems, to develop solutions in areas such as digital marketing, event management, ticketing, and many others. I reached her in Nairobi. Claire, thank you so much for joining us today on The Voice of America. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Jackson.
And you assumed your new role earlier this year. First of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
There's a lot of excitement on the continent on some of the new changes that you'll bring to this young league. Let's start off with you giving us a little overview of the NBA Africa and its mission.
Okay. Thank you, Jackson. I'm very happy to be part of this. Thanks for having me over. Yes, so NBA expanded its footprint to Africa many years ago, but more specifically, NBA established its NBA Africa office about 4 years ago with a league. It's called the Basketball Africa League, which is in its fourth season now on the continent. And the mission really is to use the power of basketball to transform Africa's economies, and also to contribute to the well-being of society, of the youth, using the power of basketball. And what we've seen is that basketball can actually be a big catalyst for economic development. If you have a developed basketball, as I have seen in Rwanda, where I come from, you have infrastructure like an arena, you have the local federation improving because they want to be part of, you know, the big story and also be part of the Basketball Africa League. You have the ecosystem from hotels, restaurants, transport systems, security, all of them feeding into the basketball economy. And as a result, really driving economic development. So NBA is very excited to contribute to this and to really use sports as a big tool for economic development.
Right. And one of the new changes that you've already implemented or you're implementing is this Triple-Double Accelerator Program. Tell us about it and its objectives.
First of all, how we plan to grow basketball on the continent through the NBA Africa office is to leverage the strength of the continent. The continent is very strong in sports talent. I think we have a lot of strong sports talent, but the continent has a lot of other big attributes that we think intersecting basketball to those big attributes on the continent is a win-win all through. So one of those areas is tech. Africa's youth today are very innovative. We have countries like Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, South Africa, Rwanda, etc. that are attracting more and more venture capital and being able to develop solutions that can actually make significant changes in different businesses. And so we know, as we've seen in the US with the NBA, that technology and digital inclusion is part of improving the experience of basketball or sports in general. And so building on what we've seen, in the US, but also building on the strength of the African continent youth that are very strong on tech startups, we said, why don't we initiate an accelerator that really helps to grow something Africa is strong in, which is innovation, but helping to take innovation to market. And so this is a Triple-Double accelerator where we will collect. We already have 52 applications, by the way, since we launched it a few days ago. So the response is really good, and we expect to reach hundreds of applications. And then we shall narrow that down finally to 10 and then to the top four. The ones that win, we shall give them a cash prize, but we shall also give them mentorship. Today, we are finalizing our partnerships with some big tech companies that we think have the capacity to give the mentorship they need in order to take their projects to the next level. So a successful initiative after all this will mean startups that have real solutions that we're using in the BAL or NBA Africa, because what we expect is that these solutions will be very specific to the sports and creative industry. So we will benefit from that if well developed. And the startups will benefit because we'll help them grow and to really become bigger on the continent. And so we expect a win-win for the ecosystem on the continent.
Absolutely. We love to see these convergences. Now, how does the NBA Africa Accelerator Program differ from other sports development initiatives across the continent?
First of all, I think doing it with NBA is different because NBA already has a lot of experience. It's a global brand. It's a cultural phenomenon that the world knows, but also that has a lot of experience over the several years of being in existence. And so I think the big difference is that this is being done with the NBA, leveraging on the strength that the global brand of NBA brings on board. But also what makes it different is that not only are we promoting solutions, but we can actually use the solutions if they improve the offering that we have. So we expect those solutions to maybe improve the ticketing system, maybe improve the in-arena experiences, maybe bring artificial intelligence to the experience that fans have. Whatever it is that can help, I think the fact that we are in the business of basketball, we have a league, we actually have the capacity to try those solutions and bring them on board, which makes it different from, just promoting, but also providing a platform to do that. And I think the third thing is that we are also looking at the combination of sports and creative industry, which is very important. I think we like to say NBA or basketball is beyond just the game of basketball. It is an experience, which is why we're very big on entertainment in our arenas. We're very big on, supporting music, culture, and whatever fans have experience in the creative industry. We promote that together. And so this Triple Double Accelerator is also about not just solutions for the sports sector, but also sports and creative industries. And I think that's a really very good mix that we hope will be unique.
Absolutely. And you said you already have like 50 something applications in a few days after you announced this accelerator program. That means there's a lot of interest, obviously, on the continent. Talk to us a little bit about some of the specifics of in terms of resources and support that you will give to these startups that will be selected for this program.
Yeah, so first of all, it's our first year. So we are testing this and we shall, improve it as we go. Next year, we're learning from the experience of the previous year. So this is the first year of putting in place. So what we have is we have cash prizes between $20,000 to $50,000 for the top four. So the highest will get 50, the lowest will get 20. And then each of them will get the equivalent of what they get in cash in kind as well. So in kind, what we expect is mentorship from the big tech companies. We expect support like legal, understanding the legal processes that a startup should know as you navigate your commercialization of your idea. We look at intellectual property, understanding how to, register and file for intellectual property, among others. So these in-kind mentorship, coaching, support, in addition to the cash prize, is what we're offering these companies. And of course, as we go in the second year, third year, we shall see exactly what we need to customize going forward.
Absolutely. Claire Kamanzi, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us.
Thank you very much. And I hope whoever is listening will also tune in and watch our BAL games.
Absolutely.
Next, we're going to Sahara and then we're going to Kigali for finals. Please follow the games and we hope that we have you in a fun.
Absolutely. Analysts say that one of the most pressing issues in Africa's airline industry is the disparity in travel prices compared to global averages. Studies have shown that airfares within Africa tend to be higher than those in other regions, even for shorter distances. This discrepancy can be attributed to several factors, including high operational costs, limited competition among airlines, and inefficient regulatory frameworks. As a result, air travel remains out of reach for many Africans, and as a result, stifles economic growth and hindering regional integration. For more on this, I was joined by Ogaga Ujo, an independent African aviation strategist and consultant based here in Washington, D.C. Ogaga, thank you so much for joining us today. It's good to see you. So you just traveled back from South Africa to D.C.
Yes, I did.
How was
yes,
your flight?
It was good. It was
yeah,
good. It was
welcome
good.
To the show.
Thank you
I know
so
we
much.
Had you before last year. Today we want to talk about the aviation industry in Africa. They say that only 2% of global air traffic, Africa contributes only 2% of the global air traffic. Let's talk a little bit about the state of the aviation industry. First of all, why are flights so expensive?
So I think I always like to start with a bit of context when talking about the industry structure. So essentially, you know, aviation by virtue, it's a global industry, right? But different regions have different dynamics, different performance, different business models that are at play. With regards to Africa, you know, that is a very good and strong metric that you mentioned. 2% of global traffic comes from Africa. That's the share that we represent. And this has really been the case since 1990. Mm. And it hasn't changed much in that regard, in that it's been stagnant from that period. However, currently Africa accounts for about 18% of global traffic, of world population. Mm. So with those kind of two contrasting elements, African aviation has had certain structural issues that have continued, many that have improved, but overall, some of the key structural things African aviation deals with is a lack of connectivity, which is most of factors from the supply side. We have a lot of state-owned carriers, some that have a varied performance. We have limited supply in that regard because there are certain routes that have more frequent services versus others. And we have different rates of urbanization, mm-hmm. which of course affects the uptick of demand. On the other hand, we also have a high operating cost environment. You know, all airlines have to deal with jet fuel and those costs. However, in many of our economies, those costs are actually denominated in currencies that are not local, which also has the additional of currency expense, and exchange rate, and that impacts the operations of businesses. So there are a whole host of factors to your very direct question as to why it's so expensive to travel in Africa. But from a context perspective, African aviation is at a smaller scale compared to other regions. It is not as pervasive as you'd find in markets such as America or Europe, and we are not integrated into a continental transport system, which is generally enabled by some sort of economic concentration or integration.
There was some sort of a continental agreement, you know, to open airspace to carriers from different countries. What's the status of that?
So this, again, falls under the Agenda 2063 of the African Union. There are effectively four pillars around what an integrated economy looks like. What you're referring to, the single African air transport market. Of course, another pillar is the Continental Free Trade Area. We then have initiatives such as, you know, the African Passport or Visa Free Travel for Africans, as well as, you know, the role of financial institutions. Those are the key four pillars around what an integrated economy in Africa looks like. The single African air transport market is really a new commitment for an initiative that has been happening since the 60s with the organization, with the old OAU, or you're the precursor to the AU. And this has really looked at how we liberalize African aviation and really use aviation as an enabler of economic development. In 2018, a new declaration and commitment was signed to almost fast track and implement the Yamoussoukro decision. And the status is varied across different countries. There has been improved implementation overall. There are various metrics of what we look at, liberalizing air markets, having bilateral service agreements in place that are open to liberalization across jurisdictions. Mm. It really is varied.
What would a liberalized air market look like?
So it depends, and there's certain factors. One of the most probably contentious ones is ownership, right? In liberalized markets, the notion of foreign ownership is actually quite open, with the principle that, you know, an Ethiopian carrier can invest in another country, and there isn't limitations on aviation. Mm. And what you find typically is that aviation has additional limitations on foreign ownership. So one of the big pieces of that is changing the rules of the game around how investors can work across aviation. Another element is what we hear about a lot, which is bilateral air services, right? So the rules that designate how airlines can fly between countries. We all know as Africans, sometimes having to travel multiple places to get to some place in our own continent. Yes. That is a function of the agreements called bilateral air service agreements that countries have with each other. And what the single African air transport initiative tries to do is to, you know, essentially alleviate the need for that. And if they are there, have them all standardized so that they promote intra-Africa travel. Africa has no issue when it comes to intercontinental travel, and domestic travel is picking up. But how we trade and travel amongst ourselves, that's where the challenge is. And that's why we're still behind our COVID recovery.
Right. So a couple of years ago, I was in Cape Town, and I met there with this Somali reporter who told me that for him to leave Hargeisa, he had traveled to Turkey or somewhere in the Middle East and then have to fly to the hub, which, you know, Addis Ababa, and then fly to Cape Town. How do you explain those dynamics? Why is it difficult for somebody to find a flight coming from Somaliland or Somalia to come to Cape Town?
Look, I mean, that's the function of many factors. I think, you know, at the most basic level, airlines are demand driven. And in trying to, you know, really drive for commercial feasibility, airlines go where the demand is, right? And sometimes that means, in order to serve that demand, sometimes that does mean consolidating a different origin and destination point. So from a commercial perspective, you know, that's where airlines, you know, have to play. But I think at a government level, at a policy level, that's where the rules of the game around, you know, how open are our markets in terms of providing services. I think a good kind of in between is what we refer to as Fifth Freedom Traffic Rights, which is essentially the rules and laws that allow for airlines such as Ethiopian Airlines, Kenya Airways, you know, even the Middle Eastern Airlines to operate, where you have this, you know, consolidating people in one hub, moving them to another country, and sometimes via another country. So those are elements that actually stimulate travel. What we call it is, it's called security. It's not, you know, feasible for someone to have to make multiple stops because that is costly, but it is also a way of trying to consolidate demand, and that's why countries try and leverage you know, freedoms of the air so that people can travel, even if it means consolidating them via one hub. But it does add cost, and it's also a function of the operating expenses and the operating environment if you are an African aviation operator.
How difficult or easy is it for a foreign investor to come in any market X and establish a carrier?
Again, that also depends because it's different for countries within the region.
Different
rules apply.
Right.
But effectively, there's almost the ownership rules of a country. And then there's the industry. And then there's the certification, right? So, you know, as a foreign investor, one can come into a certain country and invest, but are they able to necessarily start up an airline? There's a whole certification process that goes about that, and different countries have different rules around that. What SATAM tries to do is to ensure that African airlines and African countries are able to engage with each other in that regard. Because as we relax a lot of our rules as a continent, that has actually increased in intracontinental investment, but not necessarily stimulated intracontinental investment. And that pertains to aviation as well. But in short, it's a pretty difficult feature to, to start up an airline in any market.
So you just flew from Pretoria to the US.
Yes.
Which carrier did you use?
So I used Qatar Airways.
Okay.
I do have a bias. I used to work for them as a strategist.
Right.
But I preferred to...
Did you go through Qatar?
I went through Qatar and then
so
I
you
came
went through
here.
Doha. And
exactly.
Then, okay.
And I like spending some time, of course, when you have such a long flight. So that's just my preference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I found that it's really nice to... I've flown through Doha a couple of times, and I'll go to one of those little lounges.
Exactly.
You pay a little extra money, but
exactly.
It's really, really comfortable.
Stretch the legs a little bit.
Absolutely. What are some of the top carriers on the continent, and what are some of the things they've done to be successful?
I think a huge feature of African aviation, which is different to other regions, except maybe Latin America to an extent, is that most, essentially the major players in African aviation are state-owned. Other parts of the world, that has changed. So the majors, you know, literally represent, you know, states. So, of course, Ethiopian Airlines, Kenya Airways, Royal Air Maroc, Egypt Air, South African Airways, although this has reduced over the years. And then we have previous carriers as well. In terms of some of the major players, just from a volume perspective, South Africa does actually have a heavier weight across the region because the size of the domestic market is the largest in Africa. Mm-hmm. So you have airlines such as FlySafair that actually come up in terms of volume. But what's also important at play is that Africa, like any other market, is host to a range of business models which affects airline market share. So we have, you know, the network carriers such as an Ethiopian Airlines and a Kenya Airways, and we also have the regional carriers such as an Airlink, and then we have the low-cost carriers such as a FlySafair. And those dynamics actually play quite a big role in how airlines perform. Mm.
And how do African airlines compete with international carriers, and how do they stay competitive, or how can they remain competitive in this market?
I think there's a lot of, I'd say, givens in aviation, right? It's a global industry and has always been. Additionally, technology has always been the basis of aviation. And with that kind of parameter, I think African Airlines, it's a spectrum of performance in terms of competitive benchmarking, but there are many respects where African Airlines are, I would even say, better, more competitive than other global carriers. Mm. From a safety perspective, that is also the case in that, you know, the region is very strict around safety, and that is, again, regulated at a global level. So in terms of aviation, we have the same regulations at a global level. And when it pertains to particularly safety, you know, those are mostly adhered to. But in terms of, I would say, commercial competition, it depends on the business model. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to do a lot more around being innovative in terms of e-commerce. But with that said, we also have different channels of payment, such as WhatsApp, which you won't find in some markets. Mm-hmm. So the network carriers, I would say, compete more fiercely because they have competitive markets, such as in Ethiopian Airlines and Egypt Air would compete with an American Airlines or another carrier in a similar competitive market. But at a regional business model level, we also have, I would say, pretty strong competitive benchmarking to other carriers such as, you know, your JetBlues, etc.
I have flown a couple of airlines around the continent, the local small carriers, and in terms of safety, honestly, I would, that was a little questionable sometimes. I remember flying from Lagos going to Accra. I won't name the carrier, of course, but some of the windows were not able to open the shutters. They were, you know, I just felt like the caliber of aircraft that is operating in some of those routes is a little questionable. And you're saying that they are adhering to certain universal rules or regulations.
Absolutely. And
but I feel they fall short in this, some of these things.
I think that there's definitely a service differential in certain markets, and I think that might lead to other perceptions. But from a safety perspective, you know, just to give a quick rundown, countries have to go through these audits that are done globally every year. They also have to have, you know, it's eight areas of critical safety that are addressed. Yes, from an aircraft age perspective, African aviation uses slightly older planes. I think the average aircraft age is about 20, 23 years, whereas in some markets it's 7 years. But from a safety perspective, that's a different story. Mm. I definitely think that there are cases around improving safety capacity that need to be addressed, which is, you know, public information, and that's really critical. But I also think that it's critical to understand kind of what that specific country and that specific airline's performance is, because that information is available to consumers. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important to keep on pushing that we don't just have African standards of excellence, these are standards of excellence.
Global standards of excellence.
Yeah. Not just from the safety perspective, which sometimes isn't seen from a consumer perspective, but also from the service provision and value proposition perspective.
How do you see the future of the African aviation industry as it stands right now? Mm. Looking at, you know, we are the youngest continent, many of the countries are aspiring to be middle class, so there's going to be a lot of flying needed, at least people flying with internally. And I feel like, you know, aviation plays a very critical role in that last mile of, you know, logistics.
Absolutely.
Where do you see the future?
Absolutely. I think that's such a great question, because sometimes, you know, what we see in front of us doesn't necessarily represent where the trend is going. So, you know, Aviation globally is expected to be profitable this year. African aviation, together with a couple of other regions, is lagging slightly behind. But what you just mentioned around the key drivers for, you know, the growth story that is Africa and for the future story that is Africa, the fact that the world economy will rely on Africa in many respects into the decades to come. I think that is enabled by trade, travel and transport. And where I think we're going is that we are going to see more consolidation of markets and entities. This has happened over the last few years with COVID. A lot of state-owned carriers had to, you know, consolidate, get into partnerships, dispose of assets, bring in private sector. There's a lot of those elements around consolidating more mature airline models. There's a lot of new carriers coming up, a lot of regional carriers that are expanding their markets. But I think one thing that is critical is that we should see and strive for more regional connectivity in Africa going forward. Mm-hmm. Additionally, the role of technology and digitalization is part and parcel of the African growth story. Absolutely. As well. And also looking at elements such as urbanization, the rising middle class that we always talk about, and improved standards of living, these all have a knock-on effect and are also enabled by air transport. Mm. And I think that really excites me in terms of the key drivers and signals that we see for the future.
And finally, again, I wanted to ask this question again. I feel like you've scattered around it. Mm-hmm. Some of the top airlines some of the top carriers. Are you able to tell us?
I can definitely tell you by market share, but right. I mean, the best is also subjective.
Okay, let's go by market share.
So in terms of volume, you know, Ethiopian Airlines is really the story that we know from an airline perspective.
Yeah.
But in terms of market size at a country level, you have countries such as South Africa, Egypt, Nigeria, Morocco, that are among some of the top countries in terms of a volume perspective, in terms of the size of their markets. Mm. But in terms of, you know, individual airline market share, that also does track with the countries where, you know, I mentioned the Egypt Airs, the Ethiopias, Kenya Airways, South Africans, etc. So in terms of size, basically there are about 10 to 12 airlines that really drive African aviation. And I think a future that's competitive means that should increase more in a rational way, which means that some of those carriers might have to, you know, reduce their market share or align to market forces.
And other new ones coming too.
Absolutely. Right. Not a place of oversupply, but a place of competition, because oversupply is a real issue in the aviation market. But in terms of volume, that's the easy one to answer. But in terms of best, I'll reserve my opinion.
That's a political question.
Absolutely.
Gaga Ujo, independent aviation strategist. Thank you so much for coming here and joining us today on the show.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate the insights.
Thank you.
Yeah. At least 16 African countries, including South Africa, will hold elections in the remaining months of 2024. Voters who go online for political news are risking exposure to disinformation and misinformation, but a new digital ethics organization aims to help journalists and activists identify false and misleading content so they can educate the public. Sahil Kasim brings us this story from Johannesburg in South Africa.
In the upcoming general elections of 2026.
At first glance, this video of Zambian president Hakainde Hichilema announcing that he won't be running in the next election seems authentic, but it's fake. And these journalists in Johannesburg are learning how to spot the difference with the help from a non-profit called Campaign on Digital Ethics, or CODE. Kavisha Pillay is the founding director of CODE.
We're making sure that people are accessing information that is safe and is not going to be harmful, that the technology that we're using is not going to cause further harms to our society.
Working with CODE on this project is Africa Check, one of the continent's leading independent fact-checking organizations. The staff at Africa Check encourage people to send them suspicious content. They're collaborating with CODE to teach the public how to identify fake social media content. Keegan Leach is a researcher at Africa Check.
It helps to have not just someone to step in and do some work checking that kind of information, but also to be able to share tips and tricks and techniques for stepping in to stop that spread with anyone.
Community activist Manny Sigomani will be on high alert in the days leading to South Africa's May 29th elections, on the lookout for any fake content that might affect his ward.
I think we're moving into an era where more and more the truth is being distorted, and we kind of need these kind of initiatives to keep people grounded and to keep people responsible.
The Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa has announced it will work with Google, Meta and TikTok to help safeguard the integrity of the electoral process. Siri Kasim, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to our guests and to you for tuning in. Remember to join us at voaafrica.com, where you can watch this program and other programs. We are at VOA Upfront on Facebook and other social media platforms. Also on YouTube, where you can watch our videos. Remember to like, to share, and to subscribe. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, everyone.
I'm Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossing. Every single day, Monday through Friday, 1500 Universal, we've got all kinds of great music. And on Tuesdays, we do something different, something special. It is the Spotlight Artist of the Week. And this coming up week, I've got country music superstar with over 21 number one songs, T.G. Shepherd. He'll be joining us on May 7th, so make sure you tune us in. Border Crossings on The Voice of America.